Say hallelujah! Pack up the babies and grab the old ladies, because here comes the colonel! Hallelujah!
Oh, great. Another enthusiastic introduction. I enjoy about as much of that as I can stand. Welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow, here on the Science News Radio Network program, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason. In the first half hour today, we were real lucky to have as our guest Dr. Marty Bradley, and he was telling us about the visions of creating an all-electric jetliner. Of course, we have electric cars now, and as a matter of fact, there's a big study on electric cars going to go on in Austin, Texas on the 4th of March. IEEE, the Engineers Association, is putting it on. We're going to hear more about that on this radio program as we draw closer to the event. But I happen to be talking to Veronica Rabel. She's with IEEE, and she's part of the project putting that on. And she said that there's some pushback for electric cars, even from her own colleagues. One of her colleagues told her that building electric cars with the electric power supply available in this country right now is essentially converting gasoline-powered vehicles into coal-powered vehicles. Well, that's because, of course, most of our electricity is generated from coal. From what he's read, that the amount of greenhouse gas and other pollutants generated per unit of work is actually higher for electric vehicles than for a regular gasoline car. Of course, that overlooks the fact that many nuclear scientists believe that fusion is going to be the primary source of electrical generation here within 20 years, and that coal is cleaning up. We have with us in just a few minutes, we're going to check in with Bill McMahon. He's with a company called Coal Logix, and he's going to tell us what's going on with clean coal. And of course, at the end of the program, we're going to have listener comments and the voice of reason. And but right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here in the set to answer today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, I see we have the participation of the spirit of the fountain. All right, oh spirit, here is today's query. Ah, what outfit operates the Pedro Miguel lock? The Pedro Miguel lock. Who operates it?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
You have the answer for us, as we much expected. The Pedro Miguel lock is operated by the Panama Canal.
So frustrated, the middle of this special moment, and I need to run off to the bathroom.
What? What was that?
I'm fed up with always having to put my bladder's needs ahead of my daughter.
Where did she come from? Oh, flush her out of here. Oh, how these silly commercials ever get on this program, I have no idea. And you've listened to this program, I know, over the period of time, and you remember maybe we had Luke Popovich on here at one time with the Mining Association, and he was telling us about clean coal, and we found that just fascinating. And then we connected with Jeff Chapman with a carbon sequestration organization located in London, England, and he gave us some remarkable insights about the things that are going on. And you might remember the conversation we had with Ed Morse of Caltech, a nuclear scientist who said that he believed that fusion was going to be the thing that was going to happen in his lifetime, and it would be the dominant source of energy. And I asked him about clean coal, and he said there's no such a thing. Well, we have with us today, our guest is Bill McMahon, and Bill is the founder, president, and CEO of a company called Coal Logix, and he's going to tell us there really is such a thing as clean coal. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Well, thank you, Colonel. A pleasure to be here.
Now, we're basically dumb on this, okay? I know nothing about it, but I understand your background was nuclear, and you gave that up to go to fossil fuels. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. My undergraduate degree is in nuclear engineering, mm-hmm. and I was actually working for Babcock & Wilcox, who was the designer of the nuclear steam supply systems for a number of units in the United States, and of course the most famous Three Mile Island. I was actually refueling a number of the reactors, involved in refueling of those reactors, and I was refueling Unit 1, and Unit 2 is the one that had the fateful accident which, by the way, no one was ever hurt. That was early in my career, obviously, and at that time I was really disappointed, but felt that the future of the country really was going to move away from nuclear. I'm not sure if your listeners know this or not, but about 50% or more of the electricity in the United States is provided by coal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something we're going to be able to get away from anytime soon. So it made all the sense in the world for me to get into that business and to try to make it cleaner.
Well, I understand that, that it takes many wind turbines to replace one coal-fired furnace, and China, I understand, is building a new coal-fired electrical generator one a day, and so it looks like coal, of course, is cheap and plentiful, and we're going to be using it a lot. And then we have those who say, gee whiz, it's so dirty, there's nothing to do about that, it's just the clean coal doesn't exist. And along comes coal logic, and take us right from the beginning. What exactly is it that coal logic does?
Well, coal logic's mission in life is to reduce the environmental footprint of coal-fired power plants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something that is, you know, cocktail parties and all, people are really astounded when I give them the following statistics. The Clean Air Act was enacted in the United States in 1970. Since that time, our GDP and our use of coal is up many-fold, three, four-fold. The amount of electricity we get from coal is up, I think it's 200%.
Oh, wow.
On top of that, because of the laws that went into effect in 1970 and ones that have followed, the amount of sulfur oxides, nitrogen oxides, and particulate, which everyone thinks of as the dirty constituents of coal, are down between 40% and 80%.
Oh.
On a real-time basis, even though we're burning 200% more.
Mm-hmm.
Those are to meet today's rules and regulations. The rules and regulations today only require that about, I'd say, a third of the coal-fired power plants in the United States to have NOx reduction, that's a greenhouse gas, and about half of them have SOx reduction, the scrubbers that people talk about to take the sulfur dioxides out. And pretty much over about 90% have particulate removal, which takes out the dust and the particulate.
Okay, so then you don't own coal power plants. And what you do is you provide a service for the coal generators, the electricity generators that are coal-fired. And how does that work? I mean, I went to your website and I tried to figure it out, and I'm not a scientist, and it said something about the catalyst. What is this catalyst thing that your website talks about?
Well, today the company is focused mostly on NOx reduction, which again is a greenhouse gas. And as I said, about one-third of the units out there today have SCR. SCR stands for Selective Catalytic Reduction.
Okay.
So what happens at the back end of a power plant, picture a huge power plant, pretty much the same as your fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
You burn coal. A typical 500 megawatt power plant will burn about 300 tons per hour of coal.
Okay.
There, it produces a lot of nitrogen oxides. The nitrogen oxides go through go out, if not treated, go out the chimney. An SCR basically takes the nitrogen oxides, combines it with ammonia, and in the presence of a catalyst, turns the nitrogen oxide into nitrogen, which is 80% of what we breathe, and water. So a little bit over 90% effective, and it makes, you know, very benign, you know, water and nitrogen. That catalyst, and there's a huge amount of this catalyst, wears out over time, and the typical life for this catalyst is about 3 years. If not for our technology, that catalyst is taken and put into a landfill, and a new catalyst is purchased. And by the way, the catalyst that's purchased is invariably from outside of the United States.
Okay.
To give you an idea of the amount of landfill, in a typical year, regeneration, which allows us to reuse the catalyst, and that's my business, will obviate the need for about 50,000, the equivalent of 50,000 cars in landfill. So picture 50,000 cars stacked on top of each other,
okay.
And that's the amount of landfill that we don't have to do if we regenerate. Now, regeneration allows us to regenerate the catalyst, make it so that it's as active and performs as well or better than new, and does it for about 60% of the cost, which helps electricity prices come down, and obviates the need, as I said, for landfill. The other thing that it does is if you make new catalyst, you require a lot more energy and a lot more steel, which requires CO2 to be generated.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of CO2 that we save by regenerating and reusing the catalyst is equivalent to putting about 100,000 electric cars on the street every year. So that's what our company is focused on today. However, we actually manage SCRs, and what we're working with the utilities on is expanding our services to be able to reduce SOX, the sulfur dioxide, the particulate, and other pollutants from the power plant, even in water, as we have our long-term agreements with them.
All right, so let me repeat back what I think I understand. The nasty stuff that is generated out of the coal plant is captured in a substance, a device called a catalyst, and this catalyst becomes, of course, contaminated after a period of time, and then they have to be buried in the landfills, and you're able to take the catalyst and rejuvenate the catalyst so it can be returned to use. And in the meantime, you're saving an enormous amount of waste that ordinarily is put into landfills, and you're also cutting down on the carbon emissions, which it takes to create this catalyst. Did I summarize that pretty good?
That's pretty good, and on top of that, we do it for less money than they would spend for new catalysts.
Okay, all right. Now that makes a lot of sense. So it's both carbon dioxide, but that's all the other nasty stuff too. The coal generates that. What you're doing is saving and taking care of. Well, when you clean the catalyst, you take the waste. What do you do with that waste?
Well, now, Colonel, you have to think about this. You know, if you go back to high school chemistry, which for me is a long time ago, but you know, a catalyst promotes a reaction. So basically what it does is it lowers the activation energy to be able to have a reaction occur.
Okay.
So a catalyst is not a filter. So this what actually happens is the nitrogen oxides, this is NO, NO2, NO3, are turned into nitrogen and water. And so there's really nothing... this is not a filter at all. So the coal, you know, coal comes from the ground, so it's going to have the same constituents that are in the ground, like arsenic, like silica, like you know, different things like that. And we certainly do treat that and lock it up so that it's non-leachable, and it goes through a testing program to make sure it's non-leachable before it is put into a landfill. But the amount of landfill that comes out of our plant is tiny compared to what we were talking about here.
So that arsenic and those other poisons and that sort of thing is heavy concentration, but it's contained so that it won't leach. It just gets buried away for all time and, I guess, gradually loses its potency or something of that nature, or there when somebody was to dig it up or something. Huh?
And it's really not even that that concentrated. I mean, you're talking about, you know, parts per million of arsenic. You're not talking about, you know, pounds of arsenic.
All right, and now you've been doing this, I think, sometime since, what, 2007 or something like that, or 2008, so you haven't been around a whole long time. Who are your customers, Bill?
Well, first of all, the company was founded in 2004, and it's a technology that came to us from Germany, mm-hmm. where they've been doing this since 1997, 1998.
Okay.
So the technology's been around for a while. It's been running in Germany. Our customers today are the electric utilities in the United States, and especially the electric utilities that are most worried about their environmental footprint. We have long-term agreements with a lot of them, but I mean, the general, just to drop some names, AEP, Duke, Dayton Power and Light, Detroit Edison. You can name Southern Company, TVA. You can name pretty much any power plant or any utility in the United States that is that burns coal, and we've probably served at least one of their plants.
And so that means that you're growing, and of course, with new power plants being opened overseas, are you doing something? I guess Europe's all tied up with that particular service, because that's where you got it from, over in Germany. But what about in Asia and other places? Are you doing anything overseas?
Well, first of all, yes, we are growing. Today, we've been growing at about over the last 3 years, we've been growing at about 100% per year. We recently received an award for Charlotte, where we're the fifth fastest growing company in Charlotte, and that's at 100% per year. So the winner was over 400% per year, mm-hmm. over 3 years. China is a huge market and growing. Environmental laws are now being put in place there, and we've actually formed a company in China. And we'll be pursuing that over the next year or two.
Of course, China has flatly refused to do this, the capping their CO2 emissions, and so I presume that they would probably be interested in anything that you can do to probably help that. But it isn't China alone. I understand Brazil, South Africa, and India, and other places. So how wide is going to be the scope of CoalLogix? I mean, are you going to conquer the world?
Well, you know, this is my fourth startup or turnaround company, and one of the things that I'll tell you is the key to success is focus. So we've been focusing on the United States market. Next, we'll focus on the China market. The China market is about 4 to 5 times the size of the U.S. market because they're requiring all of their units to have NOx reduction units, whereas mm-hmm. the United States, because of the cap and trade we have, is only requiring about a third. So, really, we have more than we can say grace over just with the United States and China. So that's really where we're going to be focused.
All right, fascinating stuff. Now, what have we missed? What haven't I asked? What do we need to fill in? I've got kind of a pretty good idea, and I think I summarized it there a little bit earlier after you gave a very nice detailed description of what's going on. But I never want to end these interviews without finding, that thing that we didn't cover. And you and I haven't had a pre-conversation on this interview before we got together and go over any talking points. So I'm totally dumb, and you got to bring me up to date. Where are we here, and what did we miss?
Well, really, you know, when you think about where we are in the United States, coal is a strategic asset for us. We believe that, and certainly other countries like China believe that coal is strategic for them. About 80% of their power comes from coal.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs are very important for us here. So between the coal and the jobs, we are creating cleaner energy. We're creating jobs. We're creating them here at home. And you know, really, energy and growth are very well tied. I don't know if you ever looked at any statistics, Colonel, but the GDP of a developing or growing country and the electricity consumption are you know, almost identical.
Mm.
So you can't grow without more energy infrastructure.
Yeah.
You mentioned solar and wind earlier. I'm a big proponent of both of those, especially when the sun shines and the wind blows. When they don't, there has to be a backup to them. But if you think about how do we make the planet cleaner, a 1% change in the environmental footprint of coal-fired plants in the United States is equal to 150% of all of the wind and solar installed so far in the United States.
Wow.
So really what we need to do, in my opinion, is not stop solar and wind, but we really need to be pushing on the long end of the lever if we want to clean up the world and take care of coal. We've proven, the industry has proven, that we can reduce the environmental footprint, and the technologies are there if the regulations require it, and if we really want to do it. So really, it's a choice for us. Clean coal is a choice. It's not a question of is it or is it not there. It's a choice.
Well, we're going to need, I think you have saying on your website, we're going to need 8,000 megawatts of new electricity every year. And right now, the only place it looks like we're going to be able to approximate that is going to be with coal. Is that correct?
Well, if you think about it, Colonel, at a 1.6% growth rate, which is what we had prior to the economic downturn, we were requiring between 7,000 and 8,000 megawatts a year of new generation, and on top of that, if there are any retirements of old plants, so some of the old nuclear plants are looking to get retired, some of the old coal plants. So we're going to have to fill that in with something. I don't know how to do that today with anything other than coal and gas, and you know, a coal plant today will take at least 6 years from the time you say I want to do it to the time you get it running.
Mm-hmm.
And a gas plant will take 2 or 3 years, and you have to have the gas to get there, and you have to have the infrastructure.
Okay.
A nuclear plant is at least 10 years away.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm afraid that we are writing that we're running a deficit, an energy deficit in the country, and we're going to come out of this recession and downturn. We're not going to have the infrastructure, and we're not going to have the energy to be able to sustain a growth going forward. And we're going to give up our spot on the ladder of the world to others.
Bill, this has been wonderful. Thank you a bunch. Well, you're a fascinating guest. This has really been a fascinating subject, and it's been very good that you've given up your time to.
Great, thanks very much, Colonel.
All right, thank you, Bill. Bye bye.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Well, you can't give up. You know, you get 99 no's, and don't give up because you're still looking for one yes. The most important thing is perseverance, above all. And also, listen to other people's advice. Some people are stubborn, and they think their ideas are best. I've changed my concepts repeatedly as I've gotten input from people. This is Roger Faulkner, Electric Pipeline Corporation in Cambridge, New York.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you. I am waiting. Oh.